This episode of She Explores is brought to you by Deuter. You might know Deuter for the technical hiking, backpacking, snow sport, bike, and travel packs they've been making German-engineered since 1898 for comfort, fit, and ventilation. But they also have a long-standing commitment to craft their durable packs with sustainability in mind, with a goal to be PFC-free by 2020. Don't know what PFC-free means? We didn't either. We'll learn more about it and Deuter's latest innovations to support environmental sustainability later in the episode, so stay tuned. We'll talk with Rebecca, a member of the Deuter team, about Deuter's latest technology for recycled materials that can support your daily lifestyle. Learn more at deuter.com and find the perfect bag for your next adventure online at rei.com or your local online outdoor retailer.
This episode of She Explores is brought to you by Appalachian Gear Company, who crafts a one-of-a-kind, 100% sustainably sourced alpaca fiber layering system, engineered by nature, designed for the trail, and USA manufactured for all your outdoor activities. Their alpaca fabric hoodies offer unmatched breathability, moisture management, and odor control with 100% responsibly sourced alpaca fiber. Their products are lightweight yet durable, making it a great layer to stand up to the test of harnesses and other outdoor gear. Plus, alpaca garments and accessories are machine washable, hypoallergenic, and made with zero added synthetics and no harsh chemical treatments. So you can feel as good about where your gear comes from as where you're going with it next. Learn more and see the entire line of products at AppalachianGearCompany.com. That's AppalachianGearCompany.com. GearCompany.com. AppalachianGearCompany.com. I'm Gail Straub, and you're listening to She Explores. Late last week, I put out a call for your outdoor memories, and as always, this community delivered. Here's Becky.
I'm longing for my bike right now. I'm longing for that hard-earned downhill on red rocky terrain somewhere outside of Moab. My legs tired from the day, desert breezes in my face. Bikes have always been a big part of my life. After I rode across America a few years back, the bicycle, as a collective thing, etched itself into my soul as a symbol of freedom. Hard-earned, human-powered, soul-filling freedom. That's what I'm yearning for right now, that tailwind to my whole human self.
So when I've been having trouble falling asleep at night, I found myself closing my eyes, inhaling and exhaling, and transporting my stretched out body to a dock on a lake in Maine. The boards are hard, so they should be uncomfortable, but the sun has warmed them and the water is gently lapping underneath. If I look down, the lake water is clear and has a distinct summer smell. All of this is enough to lull me to sleep. For a lot of us, the outdoors is our happy place. And yet it feels silly to long for those places and experiences when we're in the midst of a global pandemic. What is our loss in the face of so much loss? And yet our longing is real. This episode is an opportunity to relive, to grieve, and to celebrate outdoor adventure without judgment. It also exists to create room in our lives for the possibility of more to come. Because you all are so great, I received more submissions than I'm able to include in this episode. I'm still deciding on how to include more of them in future episodes, so I want to thank you all for your generosity and patience in sharing your memories with us all. Let's go.
When I recall the moments collected outside, some of them are around the world. I am sitting on a cliff in New Zealand looking out over the sea. Or I am at the foot of Mount Snowdon in Wales. Or I'm just outside a pub with my family, having come outside into the warm summer's night air. Each of these moments are completely inaccessible to me at the moment, even the simplest of them. But each of these moments from different times in my life, different places in the world, are connected by something that is accessible to me. In each of them, I am looking up in wonder at the stippling of stars across the clearest of night skies. Now in the corona lockdown, all I have to explore is a small square of flats surrounded by suburbia and a patch of outside that is little more than a place to store the recycling boxes. That little alley is between a wall and a fence, a place that during the day the sun barely kisses. But after a clear day, there is a clear night. I try to go outside every night and look up. At first, the sky is polluted by the light, but the longer I look, the further I see, and I realise that there above my head, there is a small patch of infinity. I might feel contained at the moment with walls on all sides and nowhere to go. But looking up, I can feel like there is an endless outside available to me.
Fran's patch of infinity also reminds us that if we look out far enough, there are countless of us all over the world searching for a similar thing. In listening to your submissions, many of us are looking back to our earliest, most formative outdoor experiences. Here's Genevieve.
When I was a little kid, we lived in Riverside, California, which was just this dry, desolate, barren area. We lived on the Air Force Base. But in our free time, in the summertime, my stepdad and my mom, we would drive over the mountains to the Pacific Ocean, and we would camp for a week or two in a big canvas tent on the beach back in the days when you could camp on the beach. And to this day, I cannot tell you what that did for me, making the planet Earth come alive, the roar of the waves on the shore, that briny smell of the fish as the fishermen clean their catch near the showers where we would all wash off the salt and the sand, the memories of the cooler with the amazing food, which back then was probably Wonder Bread, mayonnaise, and bologna with iceberg lettuce, and digging holes and burying ourselves, the sensation of being completely immobilized by sand up to our neck, or crafting a mermaid skirt over our lower body, being in the ocean and rising and falling with the pulse and the feel of the waves, the smell of the seaweed, seeing sea urchins and starfish, and knowing that the beaches are what they are today and that nobody will ever experience again what we experienced in Southern California on the beach back in those days. Those are some of the most formative memories of my life, and I live every single day trying to recapture those. And I'll be honest, I do a pretty good goddamn job.
Maddie was 14 or 15, the first time she backpacked in Yosemite.
But I want to read a short description just of my thoughts. I just remember I instantly regretted taking my journal with me this first time because it added extra weight. But looking back on it now, I'm so glad I did. Here's a little insight to my 15 years old mind on my first time backpacking and what it felt like. The ground beneath my feet was spongy, with dewy grass and dirt. My shoulders ached from my pack, and it was the only time I had ever considered ripping the pages out of anything, let alone my own journal, with all of its meticulous underlining and notes. My breathing was still labored, and I was having a hard time taking a full breath at the altitude. My diaphragm actually hurt each time I tried to inhale, clearly having never worked this hard before. A stream flowed through the meadow hugging the cliffside we made camp beneath. My friend's laughter echoed off the sides of the rocks, the dust beginning to cast glowy light upon everyone's face. I gazed at the beautiful scene, perched on a rock above the water. I dipped my feet in the stream so I could watch the dirt that had clung to my heels and ankles dissipate. I thought it was almost graceful how it all faded back into the landscape from where it came. The meadow sat below Vogelsang, which we had summited that afternoon. There was an air of giddiness since we'd stood so high above everything else, the rest of Yosemite fading into the dark with the clouds. My legs screamed at me as the trail steepened, and there was definitely a point I wanted to throw my pack off into the abyss. But then we were there. A final granite staircase led us to the top, and it was like walking up the steps to my house back in Monterey, welcoming and relieving. We shrugged off our packs and danced around in victory, the last 4 days of climbing beautifully behind us in a haze of sweat and skin knees. There's a certain way the top of the world felt in the meadow below it, where we would sleep that night, and that feeling too, it's so simple, sheer, almost cloaked in a heavenly light, the kind of light that peeks through the fog. There's a crispness in the air, a pleasant chill that requires you to keep your windbreaker on. It's an air that is cleansing, completely free of everything except the mountains, and causes you to inhale sharply with the cold.
My memory is hiking up Mount Lafayette with Gail when she was in high school.
Yep, this is my mom.
We were in our 50s and she was on the cross-country team in great shape. You know, it was a miracle that she wanted to hike with her parents, so we didn't want to hold her back. And she was patient with us for at least halfway up the trail. Now, we were huffing and puffing up the bridle path, and suddenly she had to go to the bathroom. We told her to go ahead up to the Greenleaf Hut. Gail bounded off out of our sight. Now, she didn't have the greatest sense of direction then, so after a while, we began to get really worried. We asked various hikers going up and coming down if they had seen our daughter. All answered that they had seen a girl running up the trail with a concentration and speed that was awe-inspiring. Gail was a legend on the trail that day. And I believe she made it on time. Love you, Gail.
I love you too, Mom. We're not just longing for outdoor adventure and nature right now. We're longing for family. Here's Gretchen, who was on our Adventure Friends episode back in 2018.
My mom, my sister, and I used to go on backpacking trips almost every summer. They were filled with the kind of quirky adventures that leave you laughing so hard you're crying while simultaneously wanting to murder your younger sister for leaving your hiking boots outside the tent and waking up to a downpour at 4 a.m, realizing that your shoes are going to be so soaked all day long. But we kept climbing and we kept camping and we had such a good time. But then life got busy. And we haven't been on a trip like this together in years. And after my mom's mom passed last month, we planned an impromptu camping trip to Joshua Tree outside of where my sister lives in LA. And this would be the first time the three of us would be back together on a camping trip in probably 8 years. Of all of the things that I'm missing right now, I'm missing those moments that we're not having. And more than that, I'm missing the years that it's taken us to get to a point where we could make the time to make this trip happen. If there's one thing about the outdoors that I know, it's that it's always going to be there, but that time is so precious and time with family is so precious. And if I have a regret, it's that we did wait this long to be able to get back together. And while I'm in Alaska and my mom's in Vermont and my sister's in California, we're in these incredibly different landscapes at varying degrees of stuck at home. And while I'm out walking in the mountains close to my house here, watching the snow melt, seeing the sunshine, breathing the fresh Alaskan air that fills my lungs with so much hope and sanity, sanctity, I suppose. I know that their lives look entirely different, and the moment that we had that we were all going to come back together, we don't get to have. And wow, that's really sad. We've been FaceTiming every day and doing group workouts and playing family games. And I know for a fact that once all of this is said and done, that the first thing that I want to do is plan our next backpacking trip.
We'll hear more after this.
This episode of She Explores is brought to you by Deuter. You might know Deuter for the technical hiking, backpacking, snow sport, bike, and travel packs they've been making German-engineered since 1898 for comfort, fit, and ventilation. But they also have a long-standing commitment to craft their durable packs with sustainability in mind. We're back with Rebecca, a member of the Deuter team, to talk about their new line of packs that are PFC-free and what exactly that means.
A few years ago, we set a goal for ourselves to become PFC-free by 2020. So we're PFC-free as of 2020, which is right now. We also have some really cool product launches coming up, including one that's a day pack, and it's made from fabric that utilizes post-consumer plastic water bottles. PFCs are perfluorinated and polyfluorinated compounds, and some of those compounds are really thought to be harmful for our health and for the environment as a whole, because once they're released, they disperse widely and take several hundred years to degrade. And even though most people probably don't know what PFCs are, they're found in a lot of everyday items that need to be water, grease, or dirt repellent, which is really important in the outdoor industry and in the products that we love, like backpacks.
Learn more at deuter.com and find the perfect bag for your next adventure online at rei.com or your local online outdoor retailer.
We're back. Here's Amber.
Spring is an invigorating season of transition and life. There's a lot of built-up anxiety released when you begin trekking on bare ground. Spring also means desert season, when my chacos officially emerge from their under-the-bed hibernation. I'm lucky to have spent nights giggling around a campfire with friends, beer, and sandstone cliffs. It's cool enough for me to willingly cuddle my friends, a rare occurrence. When I lay down to succumb to sleep, I'm greeted by the billions of winking stars and am completely content. In the morning, my friends are bouncing around, fueled by the prospect of a new day and morning energy. When I imagine the desert, I think of freedom. There's no schedule, only experience. I long for these cherished experiences, feelings, and memories. Trekking, friends, sandstone, stars, and freedom. When I imagine the desert, my mind auto-populates a scene with the most breathtaking geologic features: arches, slot canyons, towers, and cliffs. These features are a sign of resilience and strength. I'm applying these qualities to myself for the time being and recognize there will be a time to rejoice in the magic of the desert once more.
I think the memory I'm going to talk about is sticking with me for two reasons. One, because its 1 year anniversary is coming up, and the other because it was truly a turning point for me, both physically and in my career as an outdoors woman.
This is Iz. The next few submissions are reflections on the transformative power of spending time outside.
Last May, I, along with my partner Kyle Tui and two of our friends, Hallie Holland and Hannah Barkey, made the classic post-ski season migration down to Utah's desert. This trip was different than others, though, because this time we were in search of snow. The La Salle Mountains, which stand almost 13,000 feet above sea level at their highest point and span a length of about 10 miles long, sit just outside of Moab, Utah. Starting in the early hours of May 1st, 2019, we set off with a goal to summit and ski Mount Tukanikovits, one of the 50 classic ski descents of North America. For me, this goal wasn't really about the actual skiing. It was about proving to myself that I was strong enough to accomplish what we had set out to do. In February of 2018, I was diagnosed with ulcerative colitis, an autoimmune disease that affects my large intestine and therefore the way that my body processes nutrients. Through my diagnosis process, I lost 20 pounds in 2 weeks, and along with the weight, I lost the strength to do a lot of things I love to do, a lot of things that I used to define myself. Some days, I didn't even have enough energy to ski lift access terrain. After over a year of experimenting with medicines, working with a dietitian, battling with insurance, and coping with a lot of things I had no control over, I was finally in remission. Just 1 week before setting off to ski Mount Tukanikovits. I was nowhere near back to my normal muscle mass and hadn't regained the 20 pounds I had lost the previous year. But I had to give this a shot. After hours of walking, which we later realized we had taken the long route, and my on-the-spot intro to crampons, we stood on the summit, high above the desert floor. 9 miles and almost 4,000 vertical feet of elevation gain later, I stood at the top with two of the most badass women I know and an extremely supportive partner who knew how jazzed I was to be on top of that mountain. I know at the beginning of this, I said I wasn't in it for the ski, but aren't we always truly in it for the ski? We descended roughly 2,500 feet of beautiful surfy snow in May, a total dream. And now, big days in the mountains are put on pause, but memories like this one get me excited to plan for future missions.
Here's Nikki. You might remember her from an interview we shared last June.
One of my favorite outdoor memories that comes to mind right now happened in 2018. It was just a couple months after I came out publicly as trans, and my friend Irene Yee, some of you might know her as Lady Lockoff, called and said she was going to be in Salt Lake and wanted to do a photo shoot. And her visit happened to coincide at the same time with another friend who was going to be in town, named Lex, who I had just met about a month earlier at the Homo Climbtastic, this queer climbing festival that happened in the New River Gorge in West Virginia. And so he came out to visit. We climbed together a few days and then met up with Irene on the day she was going to be in town and headed up to American Fort Canyon just outside of Salt Lake. And we went up to this wall that I had in mind. It was one that I had bolted and done a bunch of first ascents on years earlier, but I had a couple projects there still that I hadn't completed yet, and one of them I knew would look really good for photos. So we started hiking up there. It was a long, steep hike, and as we were hiking, the clouds were just getting darker and darker, but we got to the base, and the wall was completely socked in. Thunder started booming all around, from echoing off the cliffs near us, and we weren't sure whether we were going to get a climb at all. But after about 20 minutes of waiting it out, the storm finally passed, and so I fixed a rope above me so that Irene could get a higher vantage point to photograph me climbing, and then started climbing the route. And I got to one point on the route, and I just got so overwhelmed with emotion that I had to stop and take, and I hung on one of the bolts. And I looked down at my friend Lex, who was the first trans person I had knowingly climbed with. Irene was up above me taking photos. I was on a wall that I had done first ascents on. I was wearing climbing shoes that I had designed for a brand that I had created using climbing gear for that same brand. And it was the first time I was able to really experience everything I had done in my life in the climbing world as myself. And I just started crying. And Irene just kept taking photos of me. And I'm just up there on this wall, surrounded by people who loved and cared for me. And it was one of the most beautiful moments of my life.
My name is Andrea. So I was a member of the Curvy Killy crew, and hiking Mount Kilimanjaro was on my bucket list, and it was an incredible experience. Because of that trip, I was hired by Woe Travel to become a gal, a group adventure leader, and I am now a gal for Woe Plus. And the trip that I trained on or co-led was a trip to Peru this summer doing the Salkantay trek. And this was another group of plus-sized women. And this trip was very special for me for a couple reasons. One of the reasons was, again, being a plus-sized group, the connections that were made were unlike any other group. And on this trip, we all made it to the Salkantay Pass together at the same time. So that moment, that incredible emotional moment of connection with hugging and tears is one that I can't possibly explain into words. The other part of that trip for me was, let me back up to about 20 years ago. I hiked the Inca Trail with two friends from college, and the Inca Trail finishes at Machu Picchu. On that trip, because of ill-fitting boots, my toes were smashing into the front of my boots going down all the long downs. It was very painful, and my two big toes became black and blue. And so by the time we got to the end of the trail and into Machu Picchu, I had no desire to explore that ancient city because I was in so much pain. So I chose to sit down outside the gates and wait for my friends. So fast forward 20 years, and after the Salkantay Trail was completed, we took a rest night and then took a bus up to Machu Picchu. But as we were walking up, the small trail going up into the city is exactly the trail that the Inca Trail finishes on. So I was hiking up to finish, to complete the circle, to the culmination of my past hike of the Inca Trail. And that was just, I was just so grateful that that was able to happen.
This whole social distancing and living through a pandemic has been extremely difficult. I'm fortunate to still be able to work remotely, but having to stay home, not being able to see others or go on adventures have been tough.
This is Jasmine.
To get through this, I've been trying to push myself out of my comfort zone and try new things. I recently started Instagram. Listening to your podcast and following various Instagram accounts inspired me to finally make the jump. I want to share my stories as a Latina who loves the outdoors, and I also hope to share stories of people of color who also love the outdoors. I believe representation matters. Right now, all my past adventures and travels, backpacking through Europe, hiking a few days on the AT, and definitely snowboarding, will be getting me through this time. I went into old memory cards to get image for this post. It was hard to pick just one picture. I chose a picture from last year when my husband and I decided to get off ski resort and split board in the backcountry. We researched and picked Tuckerman's Ravine. Split boarding puts two of my favorite activities into one, hiking and snowboarding. We skinned up 2 hours to the ranger station, took a break, and wandered a bit before heading down Sherman's Trail. We researched this trail beforehand, wanted to keep it easy. We stopped, and we saw this beautiful run, Hillman's Highway. We looked at it for a while, discussing if this would be a good idea, since all of this is new to us, especially first time in the backcountry. So we decided it would be best to keep it easy into our plan, but we said we will be back next year to tackle that run. I have to say, split boarding is such a rush, earning your turns. I can't wait to get back out there, even if I have to wait another year.
Hello, my name is Erin. The memory I want to share actually occurred just a week before COVID-19 really hit Boston, where I live. I'm a vegetable farmer, so I do most of my outdoor adventuring in the wintertime during the off season. This winter was a particularly hard one. My family was undergoing a lot of hardship. It's like cancer, divorce, mental illness. I personally just went through a breakup and was processing some trauma from my childhood, just all the insecurities and fears that resulted from it. All that's to say, I found myself retreating to the White Mountains in New Hampshire pretty often.
I love solo hiking, but I avoided it this year. I think I feared an emotional breakdown. So it's the first week of March. I wanted to get a good hike in before the farm season picked up, but I didn't have anyone to go with me. Reluctantly, I decided to put my fears aside and just go spend 12 hours with myself. It ended up being one of my favorite hikes I had ever been on. Being alone allowed me to be present. There were times on the hike when I just enjoyed the birds and the way the sunlight peeked through the trees, and other times I was challenging this negative inner voice. When I got to the top, I was so stoked. I softly yelled some exclamations. I was giggly. There was another group up there laughing at me. I saw this amazing bird. I had no idea what it was, but I felt like it was following me around the top. And when this guy was walking past me, I was like, dude, look at this bird. It's so cool. He was kind of just like, yeah, we're on the mountains and there are birds here. I was on such a high, I ended up bagging a second short peak that was connected to the trail. On the way up that mountain, I felt even more alone. I realized I was talking to myself in such a positive, empowered way. I literally said to myself out loud, Aaron, you are so cool. And I meant it. I wasn't even being sarcastic. I was really enjoying my own company. When I got to the top of the second peak, I just broke down. Tears were flowing. The emotional breakdown I had avoided for so long was happening, but there was this like layer of healing to it. I think they were tears of joy. Like for the first time in a long time, I loved myself. I look back on that hike now, just in awe of how timely that realization was for me. Little did I know that I was about to enter this period of social isolation where I would have forced alone time. I'm pleased to say that I'm enjoying this downtime, and I don't think I would have if I hadn't had the support of the mountains and the birds and the trees the first time that I let myself be alone.
More of your stories after this. Here on She Explores, we're passionate about remembering to absorb nature as we go. And whether you're making a bucket list of places you can't wait to experience for yourself, or dreaming about your next getaway, a great place to find nature on a future adventure is South Dakota. We know what you might be thinking. South Dakota? Well, this landscape just might surprise you. Or you might already be familiar with South Dakota's many unique spaces to immerse yourself in nature, whether you're hiking, biking, birding, fishing, paddling, or camping. Like Badlands National Park, where bison roam and the rock formations belong on Mars. Or Black Hills National Forest, where you'll find waterfalls, granite peaks, and storybook scenery. Check out the glacial lakes and prairies of its northeast corner, or the Missouri River, where you can kayak, canoe, or stand up paddleboard. You can also learn about the indigenous history of the Lakota, Dakota, and Nakota through informative museums and art galleries. Give any of these gems a quick Google and find out about the unique South Dakota landscapes for yourself. If that piques your interest, continue your quest with the free South Dakota Vacation Guide. Download the guide at travelsouthdakota.com. That's travelsouthdakota.com.
All I've had for quite some time is memories of the outdoors, and it's hard for me to remember and think about that time.
We're back. As we reflect with gratitude on the experiences that we've had, Lindsay reminds us that there are many who, for other reasons and for much longer, may not be able to access the outdoors the way they might wish to.
It's even been hard just to read She Explores posts without crying or feeling despair. I've been missing the outdoors for about 6 months now. It started in fall of 2019 with what I thought was just a sprained ankle. I couldn't remember how I sprained it. I thought surely I had tripped off a curb or rolled my ankle on a trail or out for a jog, that I was just moving too fast and too busy to remember what quite caused it. Soon after that, my other ankle developed the same symptoms, and then my wrist. And after what seemed like back-to-back doctor's appointments and testing, I found out that I had several autoimmune markers that by now were causing crippling pain and the inability to walk just more than 100 feet. I'm slowly on the way to recovery now, but the grieving process of not being able to physically enjoy the outdoors like I once had has been emotionally and mentally crippling as well. My coping mechanism for life stressors was taken away pretty quickly, with the timeline for recovery unknown and somewhere blurred in the distance. This way that I used to connect to my spouse, my friends, my kids, my faith was not an option anymore. With the global pandemic, I've actually felt a little less despair and a little less alone. Now, there's several of us that are stuck inside, and oddly, I feel some relief that my loved ones can relate a little to what I've been going through. I also feel a little less guilty being forced to take this time that I need to heal. I find some comfort connecting to others who are also now finding comfort in the practice of remembrance, that beautiful hike or the silence on that one special trail. I'm hopeful in recognizing the things we are thankful for now, the time and space to rest, and the expectation in looking forward to the time when we can enjoy the outdoors the way we all used to.
I want to make sure that we made space in this episode for big trips and adventures, as well as the more everyday ways we tap into nature. These big adventures might not be a weekly occurrence, but they help shape us, and they show us what we're made of.
Hi there, my name is Paola. I'm from Chile, South America. And right now, my outdoor memory that really has stuck with me these days is one that I had not long ago. In February this year, I had the opportunity to be part of an exploratory expedition in Patagonia, in Chile. And it was so beautiful that it makes me happy only to remember that. It was really special, and I think it brought a lot of meaning to my life because it made me realize how strong I am. It made me realize also that that I need to simplify my life. So now that I'm forced to simplify my life in quarantine days, I'm forced to think also like what things are important to me and what things are not. So in the mountains, in those 8 days when I was in the exploratory expedition, I was able to think that in advance. So it was like a preparation of the things that they were coming. And also it was very liberating because I felt like a strong woman. I have always been like small and petite, and maybe I look weak, but it feels really good to feel stronger than I look. So I think it was absolutely great to have that expedition and that opportunity way before this happened. So now I feel stronger to face what we're living right now.
Next, Annalise shares a unique reentrance to the front country.
I left for a rafting trip through the Grand Canyon on March 10th, just as the coronavirus was showing up in the U.S. During the trip, we heard occasional updates about the virus, but with limited service, we couldn't fully grasp what was going on outside the canyon walls. We had an incredible trip where we were completely absorbed in the routine of the canyon. Everything revolved around our meals, rafting, camping, and hiking. And for a while, we could forget that things were getting worse in the outside world. We felt lucky to be self-quarantined in a group of 30 in a beautiful place. While I'm incredibly grateful to have spent the initial weeks of the virus's spread on the trip of a lifetime, safe and healthy, it's been an adjustment to come back to a reality of coronavirus. On March 28th, we returned home to self-quarantine and the adventure stopped abruptly. It's always hard to return to normal life after being in the backcountry for a while. But this time, I wasn't returning to normal life. Things had gotten much worse while we were gone, and it was challenging to process the shutdowns, the shelter-in-place orders, and the dramatic increase in the number of confirmed cases since I left. Now, I'm trying to savor the new memories of the rafting trip by repeatedly going through photos and videos of the trip. I'm still spending lots of time outside, but within the boundary of my backyard fence instead of towering canyon walls. Most importantly, I'm trying to keep my new excitement about rafting alive until I can get back out on the water once all of this is over.
Hey, this is Julie Hotz. I'm recording this voice memo on April 3rd, 2020. I was supposed to be in Los Angeles right now, and before my trip got canceled, I was so excited about being in California on this particular date because I was thinking I could convince some friends to drive out a portion of the Pacific Crest Trail that's really near LA for an anniversary hike because 10 years ago today, I started hiking the PCT. When I think about that trail as a whole, I'm filled with gratitude and have so many wonderful memories. But when I think about that very first day on the PCT, it's not something I long for, like certainly not in the way I long for other places I've been in the outdoors, because that first day was miserable. There was no relaxation or leisure involved in any way. Everything was new. Everything was so uncomfortable. My backpack was so heavy. I was terrified. Like the whole way out to the trailhead, I had an anxious stomach because I'd never backpacked before. And yet I go back to that day so often. I go back to that person who was scared, but then learn that she could do so much more than she thought she could. It reminds me of a time where I began learning to be with myself, to exist in my body and to weather the storms. Like even the storms we're in now. I go back to so many lessons I learned on the trail. It just makes me think about all the big things, the big challenges that we have in life that change us for the better because that trail changed me in the best of ways. And so when I think about that day and how scared I was, it makes me so proud of myself that I did try. And maybe rather than having some comfortable and fun and nostalgic hike, it's more fitting to have an anniversary that's not on the literal trail, but in a figurative trail that holds space for discomfort. Like right now where I'm sitting at home in this time that's uncomfortable for us all. To have an anniversary that reminds me I'm still learning new things about myself and I'm still going through challenges that I can come out different on the other side, change for the better. I also am reminded that if I hadn't hiked the PCT, I wouldn't have any of the outdoor memories I have now, and I wouldn't have the majority of the friends I have now. And the friends that I made because of the outdoors, I'm communicating with many of them right now. They're checking in on me. I'm checking in on them. The outdoors is the gift that keeps on giving, even when you're not there. And I've just been thinking about all those things a lot.
A few years ago, I found myself confronting my fear of heights at the Half Dome Cables.
This is Charlene. Her voice also might sound familiar.
For those unfamiliar with the climb, the cables are the only way up the sheer rock face of Half Dome in Yosemite National Park. The climb marks the climax and halfway point of a nearly 17-mile hike with about 5,000 feet of elevation gains. What I knew for certain as I stood facing the massive rock was that I was physically tired, people have fallen to their death from the cables, and my fear of heights can be pretty crippling. Luckily, a hiking buddy read my face and reassured me that he'd be following right below me. He reminded me to just focus on my hand and foot placement and to take one rung at a time at my own pace. The most important advice was probably just to not look down. And with that, I reclaimed the mic from the what-if voices chattering in my head. I grabbed the first rung of the cables and I committed to the ascent. I obviously made it up and back down without incident that day. One of the things I love about my outdoor adventures is that they are most often my testing ground for building the resilience and confidence I need to get me through greater hurdles in life. My memory of facing Half Dome that day is the one I've been revisiting the most during this current pandemic. It reminds me that the best way to take on a seemingly insurmountable obstacle is by staying present and focused on each important step that needs to happen. Also, to look towards where I'm headed and not where I've been or where I don't want to go. And also that I beat fear by taking action and not getting stuck, worrying about eventualities I have no control over. Most importantly, though, it reminds me that I'm surrounded by support, even when it seems like I'm climbing mountains on my own.
I want to finish with a beautiful submission from Somang about loneliness and connection.
So last summer, I stayed on Shelkia Island, which is a small island in Finland, as part of an artist residency. And I was given a little wooden cabin right by the sea. As it was an uninhabited island, I had brought enough food and art materials for my stay. Every day I went on excursions. I would have my snake bite medicine with me, some tick remover, a sun hat. I would make a sandwich every day, and I would have my sketchbook with me. I would stop to swim, nap on warm rocks, and I'd have time to observe and take notice of the gorgeous landscape all around me. And over time, I experienced how everything seemed to exist in relationship with each other and seemed to exist in relationship to the whole, and how I could see how the unique rock formations were carved out by glaciers in the Ice Age and allowed tidal pools to form, and in turn soft green algae would grow in these pools warmed by sun and would nourish translucent shrimp. These shrimp would have yellow legs and blue bodies, and they would become tasty meal for terns and wagtails and their babies. However, after the first week of just feeling extraordinary joy and feeling really ecstatic, I started to feel the loneliness of being all by myself. It was really hard to be disconnected from human contact, and especially the evenings, I would feel how dark thoughts would surface and I would really go into these ruminations. In hindsight, I can see that isolation was a really great teacher. It gave me space to feel a deeper connection to nature, and at the same time, it helped me to understand the importance of community. Just like the shrimp and the tern, I'm part of the whole and need a community to thrive and to grow. And I can see that now, like especially now that I find myself isolated again and with everything that's happening in the world, that I know I'm connected to my loved ones, my art, I'm connected to nature and my global community of adventurous women. So I'm sending you love from my island to yours.
I'd be remiss not to share this last thank you from Iz, who shared about her ski trip to the LaSalle Mountains.
Before I sign off, I want to give a huge shout out to Hannah Barkey, who is with me during that day in the LaSalles. She's a nurse in the University of Utah's emergency department, which means she's on the front lines of the COVID-19 battle right now. Thank you so much, Hannah, and the rest of the healthcare workers out there for doing the work that you do.
Let's extend this thank you to our essential workers, bus drivers and grocery store workers and delivery people, and those who can't afford to take shelter or work from home. Yes, there's a commonality in all of this, but there's also a whole lot of inequity. Thank you too to our teachers, stay-at-home parents, and people in journalism who are working around the clock to keep us informed. I know I missed a bunch of people, so feel free to share about them on social media and I'll try to reshare them from the She Explores Instagram. Thank you to everyone who submitted. In the order that you heard them in the episode, featured are Becky Marceliano, Fran Tarauskas, Genevieve, Maddie Salvati, Mary Straub, Gretchen Powers, Amber, Iz Lamott, Nikki Smith, Andrea DeMeo, Jasmine Jones, Aaron Espinoza, Lindsay, Paola Lopez, Annalise Del Rio, Julie Hotz, Charlene, and Somang Lee. Learn more about these amazing women on our episode landing page and linked in our show notes. Thanks so much to our sponsors, Deuter, Appalachian Gear Company, and Travel South Dakota. I hope you'll check out their links too. Their support and your support means the world to us. You can find She Explores on social media, our website, and wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find me on Instagram at Gail Straub. If you enjoy listening, there are different ways to support us. You can subscribe, leave a review, and share with a friend. And if you'd like to connect, join us in the She Explorers podcast Facebook group. Music in this episode is by Lee Rosefair, Josh Woodward, Swelling, Maiden, and Kay Engel, using a Creative Commons Attributions license. The Deuter ad this week was read by Tori Duhame and featured Rebecca. She Explores is a production of Ravel Media. Until next week.